Gentleman Spaceman! Back in the safety of his rocket craft, Dirk Danger enjoys a refined space meal with Mrs. Danger and their four new ape men friends, who would much rather enjoy fine food than face Dirk Danger in combat. Dr. Mindbender was not invited. This has been another thrilling adventure of Gentleman Spaceman! Hello, and welcome back to Gentleman Spaceman's Atomic Hideout. Each episode, we explore classic sci-fi from the atomic age and beyond. I'm your host, Brad Grahowski. If you'd like to know more about me, please visit thevoiceofbrad.com. If you are enjoying the Atomic Hideout, I love you. All I ask in return is that you consider subscribing. We're 24 episodes plus several holiday specials into this thing. Don't you think it's the least you could do? LOL. Just kidding. A little. I would truly appreciate it. This is our final episode of the series. We've been on two adventures with Dirk Danger, Gentleman Spaceman. We've been all around the galaxy and traveled through time. We've experienced spaceman's luck, artificial intelligence, and a morgue ship. I've really enjoyed the rocket ride, and I hope you did too. We're going to end this series with perhaps my favorite of the stories. I'm not sure why it's my favorite. It's about a robot, so it has that going for it. It's dark and cynical and weird, and I just really like it. I think you will too. Today, it's A Bad Day for Sales. That's the name of the story. A Bad Day for Sales by the great Fritz Lieber. It was originally published in Galaxy Science Fiction in July 1953. Let's see if we can find any buyers. A Bad Day for Sales, written by Fritz Lieber. The big, bright doors of the office building parted with a pneumatic whoosh, and Roby glided onto Times Square. The crowd that had been watching the 50-foot-tall girl on the clothing billboard get dressed, or reading the latest news about the hot truce scrawl itself in yard-high script, hurried to look. Roby was still a novelty. Roby was fun. For a little while yet, he could steal the show. But the attention did not make Roby proud. He had no more emotions than the pink plastic giantess, who dressed and undressed endlessly, whether there was a crowd or the street was empty, and who never once blinked her blue mechanical eyes. But she merely drew business, while Roby went out after it. For Roby was the logical conclusion of the development of vending machines. All the earlier ones had stood in one place, on a floor or hanging on a wall, and blankly delivered merchandise in return for coins, whereas Roby searched for customers. He was the demonstration model of a line of sales robots to be manufactured by Schuler vending machines, provided the public invested enough in stocks to give the company capital to go into mass production. The publicity Roby drew stimulated investments handsomely. It was amusing to see the TV and newspaper coverage of Roby selling, but not a fraction as much fun as being approached personally by him. Those who were usually bought anywhere from 1 to 500 shares, if they had any money and foresight enough to see that sales robots would eventually be on every street and highway in the country. Roby radared the crowd, found that it surrounded him solidly, and stopped. With a carefully built-in sense of timing, he waited for the tension and expectation to mount before he began talking.
"Say, Ma, he doesn't look like a robot at all," a child said. "He looks like a turtle."
Which was not completely inaccurate. The lower part of Roby's body was a metal hemisphere hemmed with sponge rubber and not quite touching the sidewalk. The upper was a metal box with black holes in it. The box could swivel and duck. A chromium-bright hoop skirt with a turret on top.
"Ugh, reminds me too much of the Little Joe Parrot tanks," a legless veteran of the Persian War muttered, and rapidly rolled himself away on wheels rather like Roby's. His departure made it easier for some of those who knew about Roby to open a path in the crowd. Roby headed straight for the gap. The crowd whooped. Roby glided very slowly down the path, deftly jogging aside whenever he got too close to ankles in skylon or socksins. The rubber buffer on his hoop skirt was merely an added safeguard. The boy who had called Roby a turtle jumped in the middle of the path and stood his ground, grinning foxily. Roby stopped 2 feet short of him. The turret ducked. The crowd got quiet. "Hello, youngster," Roby said in a voice that was smooth as that of a TV star, and was, in fact, a recording of one. The boy stopped smiling. "Hello," he whispered. "How old are you?" Roby asked. 9. No, 8. "That's nice," Roby observed. A metal arm shot down from his neck, stopped just short of the boy. The boy jerked back. "For you," Roby said. The boy gingerly took the red polylop from the neatly fashioned blunt metal claws and began to unwrap it. "Nothing to say?" asked Roby. Thank you." After a suitable pause, Roby continued, "And how about a nice, refreshing drink of Poppy Pop to go with your polylop?" The boy lifted his eyes but didn't stop licking the candy. Roby waggled his claws slightly. "Just give me a quarter and within 5 seconds." A little girl wriggled out of the forest of legs.
"Give me a polylop too, Roby," she demanded.
"Rita, come back here," a woman in the third rank of the crowd called angrily. Roby scanned the newcomer gravely. His reference silhouettes were not good enough to let him distinguish the sex of children, so he merely repeated, "Hello, youngster."
"Rita, give me a polylop."
Disregarding both remarks, for a good salesman is single-minded and does not waste bait, Roby said winningly,
"I'll bet you read Junior Space Killers. Now I have here." I'm a girl. He got a polylop."
At the word girl, Roby broke off. Rather ponderously, he said,
"I'll bet you read G.G. Jones, Space Stripper. Now I have here the latest issue of that thrilling comic, not yet in the stationary vending machines. Just give me 50 cents and within 5.
Please, let me through. I'm her mother."
A young woman in the front rank drawled over her powder-sprayed shoulder,
"I'll get her for you,"
and slithered out on 6-inch platform shoes.
"Ugh, run away, children," she said nonchalantly.
Lifting her arms behind her head, she pirouetted slowly before Roby to show how much she did for her bolero half-jacket and her form-fitting slacks that melted into skylon just above the knees. The little girl glared at her. She ended the pirouette in profile. At this age level, Roby's reference silhouettes permitted him to distinguish sex, though with occasional amusing and embarrassing miscalls. He whistled admiringly. The crowd cheered. Someone remarked critically to a friend,
"It'd go over better if he was built more like a real robot, you know, like a man."
The friend shook his head.
"Yeah, this way's subtler."
No one in the crowd was watching the new script overhead as it scribbled, "Ice pack for hot truce? Vanadin hints Russ may yield on Pakistan." Roby was saying, "In the savage new glamour tint we have christened Mars blood, complete with spray applicator and fit-all finger stalls that mask each finger completely, except for the nail. Just give me $5. Uncrumpled bills may be fed into the revolving rollers you see beside my arm, and within 5 seconds..."
"Nah, thanks, Roby," the young woman yawned.
"Remember," Roby persisted, "for 3 more weeks, seductivizing Mars blood will be unobtainable from any other robot or human vendor."
"No, thanks."
Roby scanned the crowd resourcefully.
"Is there any gentleman here?" he began, just as a woman elbowed her way through the front rank.
I told you to come back," she snapped at the little girl. "But I didn't get my polylop."
"Who would care to?"
"Rita! Roby cheated. Ow!"
Meanwhile, the young woman in the half-bolero had scanned the nearby gentleman on her own, deciding that there was less than a 50% chance of any of them accepting the proposition Roby seemed about to make. She took advantage of the scuffle to slither gracefully back into the ranks. Once again, the path was clear before Roby. He paused, however, for a brief recapitulation of the more magical properties of Mars blood, including a telling phrase about the passionate claws of a Martian sunrise. But no one bought. It wasn't quite time. Soon, enough silver coins would be clinking, bills going through the rollers faster than laundry, and 500 people struggling for the privilege of having their money taken away from them by America's first mobile sales robot. But there were still some tricks that Roby had to do free, and one certainly should enjoy those before starting the more expensive fun. So Roby moved on until he reached the curb. The variation in level was instantly sensed by his underscanners. He stopped. His head began to swivel. The crowd watched in eager silence. This was Roby's best trick. Roby's head stopped swiveling. His scanners had found the traffic light. It was green. Roby edged forward. But then the light turned red. Roby stopped again, still on the curb. The crowd softly awed its delight. It was wonderful to be alive and watching Roby on such an exciting day. Alive and amused in the fresh, weather-controlled air between the lines of bright skyscrapers, with their winking windows and under a sky so blue you could almost call it dark. But way, way up, where the crowd could not see, the sky was darker still, purple dark, with stars showing, and in that purple dark, a silver-green something, the color of a bud, plunged down at better than 3 miles a second. The silver green was a newly developed paint that foiled radar. Roby was saying, "While we wait for the light, there's time for you youngsters to enjoy a nice refreshing poppy pop. Or for you adults, only those over 5 feet tall are eligible to buy, to enjoy an exciting poppy pop fizz. Just give me a quarter or, in the case of adults, $1.25. I'm licensed to dispense intoxicating liquors, and within 5 seconds..." But that was not cutting it quite fine enough. Just 3 seconds later, the silver-green bud bloomed above Manhattan into a globular orange flower. The skyscrapers grew brighter and brighter still, the brightness of the inside of the sun. The windows winked blossoming white fire flowers. The crowd around Roby bloomed too. Their clothes puffed into petals of flame. Their heads of hair were torches. The orange flower grew, stem and blossom. The blast came. The winking windows, shattered tier by tier, became black holes. The walls bent, rocked, cracked. A stony dandruff flaked from their cornices. The flaming flowers on the sidewalks were all leveled at once. Roby was shoved 10 feet. His metal hoop skirt dimpled, regained its shape. The blast ended. The orange flower, grown vast, vanished overhead on its huge magical beanstalk. It grew dark and very still. The cornice dandruff pattered down. A few small fragments rebounded from the metal hoop skirt. Roby made some small, uncertain movements, as if feeling for broken bones. He was hunting for the traffic light, but it no longer shone either red or green. He slowly scanned a full circle. There was nothing anywhere to interest his reference silhouettes. Yet whenever he tried to move, his underscanners warned him of low obstructions. It was very puzzling. The silence was disturbed by moans and a crackling sound,
as faint at first as the scampering of distant rats. A seared man, his charred clothes fuming where the blast had blown out the fire, rose from the curb. Roby scanned him.
"Good day, sir," Roby said. "Would you care for a smoke? A truly cool smoke? Now I have here a yet unmarked brand."
But the customer had run away screaming, and Roby never ran after customers, though he could follow them at a medium brisk roll. He worked his way along the curb where the man had sprawled, carefully keeping his distance from the low obstructions, some of which writhed now and then, forcing him to jog. Shortly, he reached a fire hydrant. He scanned it. His electronic vision, though it still worked, had been somewhat blurred by the blast.
"Hello, youngster," Roby said. Then, after a long pause, "Cad got your tongue? Well, I have a little present for you, a nice, lovely polylop." "Take it, youngster," he said after another pause. "It's for you. Don't be afraid."
His attention was distracted by other customers, who began to rise up oddly here and there, twisting forms that confused his reference silhouettes and would not stay to be scanned properly. One cried,
"Water!"
But no quarter clinked in Roby's claws when he caught the word and suggested,
"How about a nice, refreshing drink of Poppy Pop?"
The rat crackling of the flames had become a jungle muttering. The blind windows began to wink fire again. A little girl marched, stepping neatly over arms and legs she did not look at. A white dress and the once taller bodies around her had shielded her from the brilliance of the blast. Her eyes were fixed on Roby. In them was the same imperious confidence, though none of the delight, with which she had watched him earlier.
"Help me, Roby," she said. "I want my mother."
"Hello, youngster," Roby said. "What would you like? Comics? Candy?"
"Where is she, Roby? Take me to her."
"Balloons. Would you like to watch me blow up a balloon?"
The little girl began to cry. The sound triggered off another of Roby's novelty circuits, a service feature that had brought in a lot of favorable publicity.
"Is something wrong?" he asked. "Are you in trouble? Are you lost?"
"Yes, Roby. Take me to my mother."
"Stay right here," Roby said reassuringly. "And don't be frightened. I will call a policeman."
He whistled shrilly twice. Time passed. Roby whistled again. The windows flared and roared. The little girl begged,
"Take me away, Roby,"
and jumped onto a little step in his hoopskirt.
"Give me a dime," Roby said.
The little girl found one in her pocket and put it in his claws.
"Your weight," Roby said, "is 54.5 pounds.
"Have you seen my daughter? Have you seen her?"
A woman was crying somewhere. "I left her watching that thing while I stepped inside. Rita!"
"Roby helped me,"
the little girl began babbling at her.
"He knew I was lost. He even called the police, but they didn't come. He weighed me, too. Didn't you, Roby?"
But Roby had gone off to peddle Poppy Pop to members of a rescue squad which had just come around the corner, more robot-like in their asbestos suits than he in his metal skin. I do hope you enjoyed Fritz Lieber's A Bad Day for Sales, though I am sorry to leave you on such a bleak note. But in a way, I feel it's very appropriate. As we end Season 2 together, just imagine me wandering off aimlessly, bumping into things. A Roby of sorts, shilling stories instead of polylops and fizzy pops, oblivious as the world burns in catastrophe around me. Will we be back for another season? Will there be a Season 3 of The Atomic Hideout? I hope so. I do. But I'm not sure. I love it dearly, but it really is a lot of work. We'll see. I'll keep you posted. The Gentleman Spaceman's Atomic Hideout was written, produced, edited, and performed by Brad Gerhowski. For more information about Gentleman Spaceman's Atomic Hideout, visit thevoiceofbrad.com/spaceman. If you are enjoying Gentleman Spaceman's Atomic Hideout, please subscribe and consider leaving a review wherever you prefer to listen to podcasts. Thank you, and journey well among the stars.